we present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello, and welcome to the news quiz. We start with an announcement from Wiltshire County Council, read by Diana Speed.
Due to the weather forecast, the training event planned for flood wardens has been postponed.
Our thanks to Peter Williams and Marilyn Hunt for spotting that foolishness. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Terry Christian. And opposite them on my left, Camilla Long and Rich Hall. Jeremy, who's been searching for the pennies?
This is to do with the fact that Google are registered as deceased for tax purposes. And they came up with a cosy deal with HMRC. I think HMRC, you'd think they'd have been toughened up by merging with the customs, wouldn't you? Because customs men wear tri-cornered hats and have flintlocks and burst their way into to taverns and seize people's gold. But they just sort of had a meeting with Google and said, well, how much would you like to give us? And Google said, not much. And they said, that's fine, thank you. And then Cameron had to defend this in the Commons. It's been an emotional week for Cameron because in many ways Cecil Parkinson was the soundtrack to his youth. So, you know, Cameron was jumpy and, there was a thing where they've lost a court judgment over the bedroom tax and they're a bit jumpy about the Google thing. So when challenged on this, Cameron went a bit weird and condemned Corbyn for meeting what he called a bunch of migrants whom he contrasted with British people and hard-working taxpayers, making a distinction between British people and hard-working taxpayers.
Can I just defend Cameron for a minute? Because a bunch of is an improvement on a swarm of.
Well, that is true. That is true. He knew it would get a reaction because it's called the dead cat strategy. And this was used very much by the Tory propagandist Lord Crosby of Australia. What it is, if you're uncomfortable with a conversation, you drop a dead cat on the table. So you say something quite horrible that takes everyone's eyes off the fact that you're talking about tax avoidance, and you throw this sort of thing in. But then people defended Cameron, saying, well, I think people find it rather refreshing. Well, I mean, one talks about a bunch of tulips, doesn't one? But rarely do you say it to stigmatise tulips and keep them out of the country.
But I thought George Osborne, I felt a bit sorry for him because he got 130 million quid, didn't he? Wanted to brag about it, and yet it's just a bit of money down the back of the sofa to Google. But I thought, I wonder if they said to him, look, George, 130 million quid, or else anyone who puts your name in our search engine, it's going to be that photograph of you with the rolled-up fiver and that mound of what is obviously plain flour.
He was innocently trying to cover up the prostitute's buttocks to spare her embarrassment.
What I love was the absolute thrill on George Osborne's face when he gave his soundbite about extracting this tiny amount of tax from Google. Labour politicians complaining about it is a bit rich.
Well, there was this debate as to whether Cameron meant to say this or it slipped out, but either way, it's not good. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you plan to say something hateful and bigoted or you would plan to say something charming and dashing, but your hateful bigotry just willed out because you were feeling a bit flustered.
I might be on the other side of the fence here, but I don't believe Google should pay any taxes. Why? I will tell you why. Because Google is magic. Google, remember, we used to have Yellow Pages, right? That's Yellow Pages. They're gone. And they were fantastic. If you needed information, you went to the Yellow Pages. If you needed information from a person in an interrogation room, you hit them with the Yellow Pages. It was a font of information. And it would show up magically twice, three times. This is the magic Yellow Pages. We don't know where they came from. We don't know how they got there. We don't know if they made money. But if someone had said to you, hey, the Yellow Pages aren't paying their taxes, you would have gone, I will file that under my give a shit is broken. We don't care. And then there were libraries. And you went there, and There was tons of you never questioned how they make, how do they make 70p for a late book? How does this place stay in business? And if someone said, the library's not paying taxes, you would have gone, I don't care. When those are gone because of Google. But has anybody here ever got a bill from Google? I don't know how they make their money. I don't care, but they are magic, and I do not question magic, and you do not pay tax. If your child puts a tooth under the pillow and gets money, that is magic. Do you tax that? That is magic, and Google is, I don't know what it does, it's just there, and it's magic, and no. No taxes.
It is a form of sorcery, isn't it, Rich? We should be much more grateful to these people than we are, I suspect. How much tax should they have paid, unless you're Rich Hall and you think that they should be rewarded for their relentless sorcery? And
I think Rich is being facetious, actually.
Oh, really?
I think that, yeah.
I'm sorry, I assumed he'd come on here to just speak the gods on his truth, Camilla. Has anyone ever Googled anything? I guess not. I think it's quite nice that it can get to a level HMRC, you know, they're able to say, well, can we pay this much? You know, people like you and I, we're asked to pay a certain amount and we pay. If you get to a certain level of richness, you can just sort of haggle with the HMRC, which I think brings a charming sort of taste of the souk to the whole thing.
Actually, I mean, why can't we just seize their... Why, I mean, because the HMRC can just go into your bank account, can't they? Why can't the government just take the money off Google?
Well,
at the point of a bayonet. Why can't they do that? Because it's in America. It's hidden in Bermuda or something.
I'll have to come back to you on that, Jeremy. I've got literally no idea why they can't storm anywhere.
Isn't Bermuda still ours? Have we let it go? Damn.
Does anyone know any of the answers to any of Jeremy's questions?
Google this and find out.
Inscrutably, this is the tax deal with Google, announced this week by Chancellor of the Exchequer and smirking high-vis fetishist George Osborne. Google will pay only £130 million. The reason for the relatively low UK tax figure is that Google claims to have no fixed base here, in which case I presume the offices of Google London at 76 and 123 Buckingham Palace Road, or indeed their offices at numbers 1 to 13 St Giles High Street, or their Manchester office in Peterhouse, Oxford Street, are all currently empty and you can all just turn up and squat the ruddy shit out of them. George Osborne called the settlement a major success, in much the same way that Neville Chamberlain did when he came back from Germany with that lovely bit of paper. 2 points to Jeremy. Terry, which bands have been disbanded?
Ah, right, yeah, this is the Red or Scarlet bands in Cardiff. And, of course, these bands have been given out to refugees. And, of course, everybody's kicked up and said, it's like Nazi Germany. They give them the red wristbands and then, you know, the kind of targets for bigots are us, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, it's just sort of draws attention.
Yeah, it's a bit like an all-inclusive holiday with added abuse.
People kept saying, well, you have to wear a tag to go to Glastonbury. And you think, yeah, but... And that's like saying, well, I mean, what's wrong with refugee camps? I mean, people at Glastonbury have to live in unsanitary conditions in tents. Yeah, only for 3 days, and they sober up and do a presentation on Tuesday morning.
But again, we were doing the Red Doors. Everyone was getting stick about the Red Doors as well, weren't they, the other week?
I think the Red Doors are awful.
Well, I know, well,
I have
I've
say,
already
I
written a letter.
I think it's a completely different thing from those bands. That was just stupidity.
I've already written a letter and asked them to change them all to purple. No, actually, I grew up in a council house, and what they do there is every second house, one would be blue, then it'd be yellow. We had a yellow one, then it'd be blue. And every 4 years, you come round and paint them. Nobody ever investigated this, but they actually used to nick all the spare blue and yellow paint and then make green paint. Seriously, no, mate of mine used to do that. And then they go, you know, to do your house as a private job. And if you said, I want it painted black or I want it painted white, they say, well, I tell you what's in at the moment, love, holly green.
The thing about tagging people is things a bit more loaded, aren't they? When you fled a dictatorship, officialdom, is not seen as a benign thing. So if someone says you have to wear this now, you're sort of thinking
it's like Nazi Germany.
You're thinking it's like Nazi Germany.
I've noticed this a lot lately. People jump right to the Hitler card. You know, like they say, oh, you're playing the Hitler card, like first round. Like there's some gradations between painting a door red and saying this is like Nazi Germany.
We do have this fixation, don't we, in the UK of like getting a bit all World War II about everything. You know, if it's queuing at Wimbledon, it's like Dunkirk. You know, sort of waiting by the Thames for the Royal Flotilla. It's like the Blitz spirit, because it's raining.
Trying to get on a ferry, it's like Dover. people in Dover are really paranoid about the refugees in Calicut. Do you know what? They want to come here. They want to come here. All 6,000 of them, they want to come here. I think, no, don't flatter yourselves, Dover. They want to go through you. They want to go through you.
Accursedly, this was the plight of asylum seekers in Cardiff who were required to wear red wristbands in order to receive food. The firm responsible said that the wristbands were never meant to discriminate, merely a stopgap solution while the branding iron was away for repairs. The biggest problem for the asylum seekers was that when wearing the wristbands, they were frequently mistaken for supporters of the Labour Party. After a lifetime of brutal persecution, this, for many, was the final indignity. When you see someone with a red wristband, you know they're not to be trusted, said a proud Indigenous resident of Cardiff, resplendent in his traditional electronic tag. Two points to Terry. Rich, which bunch of cowboys finally met their not-OK corral?
Somewhere in the nether regions of Oregon, and not the cool part of Oregon that we all think of, where Nike is on the coast, out in the desert. There is a lot of federal land, and this is given over to grazing, to ranchers, and they in turn are supposed to pay some taxes. Pay some taxes, not like Google. They're supposed to pay taxes on the money that they make from raising cows. And you have a group of militiamen that, who aren't even from that area, who just decided to show up at this wildlife refuge center and claim that they shouldn't have to pay any taxes, and this has resulted in an armed standoff. In that American way of, we got some guns and we have the right to form a militia, according to the Constitution, and never, ever realizing that if the government wants to, it's just, they will. Yeah. Oh, you've got a couple of guns. Well, they have tanks. And lasers and drones and, you know, you're a couple of cowboys with your, so, it never works. So now one of them's dead, and another one has been shot.
When they're asking for land reform, then are they, by land reform, do they mean we should be allowed to use this land without paying tax? Is that all that land reform means in this?
It's a symbol for just the fact that they hate the government. They hate the government. I should say government. GUBMENT. Because every one of these guys spells the government. The government's coming and taking. The government can take my. Do my dead prying fingers around and because Americans just love guns, and that's what it's about. It's about to stand there with a gun, which gives you a hard on and makes you feel important. And they say, well, somebody's going to try and take my stuff. You're going to take my. Well, buy a lock. I have over 300,000 used tires in my barn. Why? It's better to have them and not need them than to need them and not have them. That's why. I will shoot. We just, you know. The Constitution was written 270 years ago. It was, you know, it didn't have anything to do with modern-day arms. It was muskets. It was, if somebody was coming after you, it was, hey, what, back up. And powder, pour powder in, put that, then put the thing down, the wadding, and then put that rod in it, and then, oh, he's gone. So, it had nothing to do with, you know, modern-day armaments, and there's something about Americans, God bless them, that they just love guns. Love them, because it makes them happy. Makes them happy. Guns make Americans happy. It's important to keep Americans happy because they have guns. I'm going to put it any other way, and the cowboy image is dying. It's dead. If you don't believe it, watch me leave this studio tonight and walk down the street and just attract a lot of gay men. That's all. I should point out I'm wearing a vest and a cowboy hat. So, made the effort more than I can say for you people. But I didn't realize.
Is there any aspect of the lifestyle that you buy into? Do you, I mean, do you have a ranch or anything?
Yes. But it's mine. It's not government land, is it? It's my land.
But you don't keep a gun on your ranch?
Do I keep a gun?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not, I mean, just a .22 rifle. I mean, you know, come on. We've all shot at each other with those things, right? My neighbor has an AK-47. Wants to go duck hunting. Knocks on my door. Wants to go duck hunting with an AK-47. I said, how many ducks are coming at
us? It's all very keeping up with the Joneses, isn't it?
Yeah. And I said, we're done. Let's go home. I don't have an AK-47. I'm going to bring a loaf of bread. You bring that AK-47. See who captures more ducks.
Vicariously, this is the standoff in the state of Oregon, where an armed siege was organized to protest at land reform following the jailing of two ranchers. The militia occupied the refuge on the 2nd of January after yet another hastily made and easily regretted New Year's resolution. This week, one of the leaders of the protest was arrested while leaving the refuge to get supplies, which seems very necessary. You can hardly expect armed ranchers in a wildlife refuge to simply live off the land. Still, let's hope this doesn't lead to copycat incidents. The last thing we want is Nigel Farage sending a message to Brussels by squatting in a rare breeds farm. 2 points to Rich. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Terry have 6 and Camilla and Rich have 7.
Go!
We start round two with a recipe suggestion from Woman's Hour.
For the smoothest cashew cheese, be sure to soak your nuts overnight in filtered water.
Our thanks to Simon Maloney for trawling the internet to find that soothing advice. Terry, who's got the balls to look for a prize?
The lottery ticket, isn't it? The missing millions that they've now found the real owner of, the right ticket.
Have they found them now?
Yeah, yeah. They found the real person, which has sort of spoiled it a bit for me, because... And it's not that I'm kind of a bit bent, but, you know, obviously, where we're from, there's a sort of Robin Hood aspect about fraudsters. It's a victimless crime, isn't it? If they can't look in your eye as you take it. So, basically, there was the old grandma... No, there was the old grandma, wasn't there, who had the numbers. But somehow she'd put it in the wash, a lottery ticket, and it had all sort of come off. It was almost like... So it was an image, wasn't it, that she'd kind of got of the actual winning lottery ticket, but without the barcode, without the date.
But it did have the winning numbers.
It had the winning numbers. It was a kind of lottery ticket Turing shroud. You know... But my favourite one was when the old grandma got confronted, didn't she, about her forged ticket, and I loved the response when it was suggested that it was a forgery. And I've written it down, so I can give it you verbatim. And she said, "Why would I make it up?" Why, indeed.
Didn't they discover that she was then sort of she'd been caught doing practically the same thing with a scratch card, pretending that she'd got £200 on a scratch card, but she dropped it in a puddle, and oh look, the last scratch card bit has been obscured, but it's real.
Worth a punt.
Yeah.
You could counterfeit money, couldn't you? Just I just dropped it in some bleach. I know it just looks like paper, but that was a 20.
I've drawn it on with my
pencil.
Yeah,
I've drawn it on, obviously. Yeah. It'd be disrespectful to the Queen not to have a go.
I've never bought a lottery ticket, but I met a man once named Liam O'Malley, and he used to buy the scratch-off tickets, and this is amazing advice. He says, you know, I always scratch off 5 of the numbers, and I never scratch off the 6th one. I always just throw the ticket in the bin. I'd rather walk around and think, what if I had won? Because I know I'm not going to win. But what if? Because what if is what fuels writing and art and love and dreams is what if. It does fuel people's dreams in the most perverse way because, you know, you're not going to win. You are not going to win. More people buy lottery tickets than vote. If you want to change your life, vote. That's the biggest load of bullshit I've ever... Stop clapping!
We tried voting. That's why we do the lottery.
Yeah. You can't.
Randomly, this is the shock news that if you announce that you have 33 million in unclaimed lottery winnings, one or two people may come forward to try and claim it. Camelot say that the prize has now been legally claimed, but this did not stop hundreds of people going after the money earlier this week on the entirely reasonable and very sensible grounds that they had heard about it. One woman in Worcester who claimed to have won the jackpot had been inviting people into her home to have a look at a photo of her ticket. I think what we can gather from this is that Worcester is in desperate need of a good museum. 2 points to Terry. Rich, who's all at sea?
This is the story of two sailors who have been rescued for the 9th time this week. I need to start this story by telling you that a bucket list is a fine thing. We all need a bucket list, but if your bucket list consists of getting in a boat in Norway and trying to float to America and being rescued by the Coast Guard, at some point you've got to look at your nautical skills and just say, why didn't we just go see the Northern Lights and be done with it? Because these clowns have been rescued, I think, 8-9 times by the Coast Guard. They made it to Cornwall, and then their boat caught on fire on land. On land. They docked it. The tide went out. They didn't see that one coming. And flipped over. They had a candle. Because, you know, a modern navigational aid, a candle, which apparently if moss grows on one side of it, you can see what direction you're heading in. I have no idea. And the candle set the boat on fire, and the fire brigade came out and put the boat out. And then the guy said, oh, we're fine. We've made it all the way from Norway to Cornwall with only being rescued 9 times. So it should be pretty smooth sailing across the Atlantic. And they should not be doing what they're doing. The Coast Guard has more important things to do.
Yeah. Does seem like the sort of thing, if it was a film, you'd think, what a charming idea, sort of two old chaps
is...
going around Britain and they think, but actually, as it's actually happening, you think, no, this has got to
yeah,
stop.
I think
no, they're just
that,
a
yeah.
couple of nice old guys who are at the end of their life and thought, oh, what could go wrong? I think it's cute because, why is everything dominated by people who are good at stuff? Well, they go, oh, I run 4K for Hair Follicle Awareness Day. And you think, yeah, but you're good at it. So where's the challenge in that? You've trained, haven't you? You've trained to do the marathon. You know you could do it. You wouldn't do the marathon if you hadn't trained, were highly asthmatic and had never got out of bed in your life. It's because you've trained for months and been on a special diet and got fit. I think it's nice. Complete idiots have no idea what they're doing. But have a go. Isn't that what made this country great?
Do you think it's fun to watch people that aren't good at something attempting it?
Yes! Who wants to watch experts do something? It's like, you know...
These are the sort of sports rights that the BBC could obtain, actually, couldn't it? The BBC won a 50-year contract to exclusively screen shit cricket or... people who cannot play football.
I think there's a difference between being not expert and actually not knowing one end of a boat from the other. Not actually even being able to get on the boat stay on it. Or
that's
not.
The case, you should be in a canoe.
Yeah. That was it.
Lifeboatmen are all volunteers, so unless you go out and get into masses of trouble in a storm, they just got to carry on doing their job. Whereas if you go out and get into loads of trouble, they get to leave work. And run out, and it's all very exciting. Have you seen a lifeboat being launched? It's fantastic. It looks really exciting. And they're all made out of bottle tops that people sent into Blue Peter in the 60s. It's great.
I love the fact that the boat was called Nora.
Aww.
Later, Flaming Nora, obviously.
Terry, have you ever seen anything like this?
Last of the Summer Wine, I think.
Quixotically, this is the nautical yarn of two sailors in their 70s who have had to be rescued by the RNLI 9 times in the last 7 months. And I clearly use the word sailors here incredibly, incredibly loosely. In their latest escapade, the boat tipped over in Cornwall, causing a candle to fall and set fire to their clothes. One of the sailors said they'd failed to blow the candle out properly. I don't know about you, but I probably wouldn't try to sail from Norway to America if I wasn't confident in my abilities to, at the very least, blow a candle out. If women and children can cross the Mediterranean on a makeshift raft, while these guys are unable to leave the coast of Britain in a 40-foot yacht, perhaps there's more to being a migrant than David Cameron would have us believe. Anyway, a light-hearted and entertaining story that I'm sure will be just as funny, even if they drown before the Saturday repeat. Two points to Rich. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Terry?
Yeah, this is sent in by John Pryor. It's from the St. Ives Times and Echo. And it's the headline was, "Sewage back in the spotlight. St. Ives' ongoing battle against sewage was back on the agenda last night as local councillors sat around to decide where to go next."
Camilla?
Oh, yes, this is something sent in by Julian Clark in Plymouth, and it's an offer for a boudoir photo shoot with a makeover. Models can show off their sexy side with a photo shoot experience and receive two prints, one of them mounted.
Rich?
This is a report from CNN sent in by Paul Tidensor. According to a senior park official at the Wangi National Park in Zimbabwe, Cecil the lion's brother, Jericho, who is also a lion... Well, yeah, enjoy yourselves, because now it gets tragic. Was killed on Saturday. Killed in a drive-by, actually. I think it's gang-related.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Terry have 11, but Camilla and Rich have 12. Before we leave you, here is a story from the Hull Daily Mail sent in by Neil Armitage.
Businesses along Hull Marina are suffering because of ongoing regeneration works. It'll be months or even a year until we're properly open for business again, a pub owner said. All of us at the marina are in the same boat.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Terry Christian, Camilla Long and Rich Hall. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news is read by me, Diana Speed. The chair's script was written by Gareth Gwynn, James Kettle and Simon Littlefield, with additional material by Liam Byrne and Kiri Pritchard-McLean. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Radio comedy production.